This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known people about their lives, their careers, and how they navigate those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Perry Phillips, and here with me, as ever, is Mr. Jim Daly.
Hello to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Well, thanks for listening.
I don't have anything else to tell you, other than that I'm fairly well.
Good. I'm good. I'm glad you're well. And I feel well as well. Like I have a lot of updates this week.
Well as well.
I feel as well as well can be. Mm. But we have some housekeeping to do, don't we? Straight from the top. I think we should get into it before we even forget.
Yeah, because otherwise we will be talking for like 20 minutes and people just want to hear the guest. And
yeah, exactly.
And we put out some, I noticed recently we put out some of the old classics. So yes. you can listen back in recent weeks. We put some of the old classics out because we got to 150 episodes. We thought, well, we should treat possibly some new listeners who maybe haven't gone back into the archive, some of our favorite, most popular episodes. And I did notice that the Top and Tails were much shorter back in the day, and how they've got longer and longer. The fact that our episodes are sometimes only 2 hours now is the fact that we just waffle on for like 15 minutes at the beginning. So apologies to our listeners that don't enjoy the waffling. For those who do, there's probably still going to be quite a lot of that, to be honest.
I didn't realise that. Well, we've really let ourselves down, basically. No, we've really eased into the comfort of hearing our own voices. We've really that big armchair. We have really sort of slouched into it. Armchair of ego.
The armchair of confidence.
Well, things progress sometimes. That's just the way of the world. I think you're right.
And to be honest, we love our listeners and we appreciate them listening, but it is our show. We can kind of do all
That's very true. Well, okay, first of all, so we got a very exciting announcement, which I'm going to leave for you. But before we do that, remind listeners that I am doing a stand-up comedy solo show. It's called Jim Daly Football and Fatherhood. It's about football and fatherhood. It literally does what it says on the tin. Yeah. And I'm doing it three times over the next few months in three different cities. So I'm in Leicester. The next one is Leicester on February the 19th. So that is not this weekend coming, two weekends this Saturday. So Saturday the 19th of February, 4:15 p.m. as part of the Leicester Comedy Festival at a venue called LCB Depot. So if you are near Leicester in the courtyard room at LCB Depot, because there's, I think it's like an arts hub and there's various sort of different rooms. 4:15 PM kickoff on Saturday, the 19th of February. If you are local to Leicester or any of the cities around it, please do come along. It's free/pay what you want. So I'll be shaking a bucket at the end if anyone thinks it's worth a few quid. And it's an hour long show about becoming a dad and football and how they all sort of intertwine. So please do come along.
Can you call this a national tour?
I don't think so. There's two other dates, London in March and Brighton in. What's the minimum amount of dates to do a tour?
I think more than two.
I say maybe then.
Because I'm sure in the back in the day when I was in the band, we used to say we're touring and it was like three gigs.
And it is three different cities. So exactly. Mini tour. It's a work in progress tour.
Three dates, three cities.
Yeah, one night only in each of them.
Yeah.
Because
one night only.
Because I would struggle to sell more tickets. It would be a complete waste of paying out the overheads. Anyway, you can buy tickets for this show, the Leicester show, the 19th of Feb, or my March London show or May Brighton show at jimdailycomedy.com/gigs. So please do go along and I'd love to see any blank listeners there. It'd be lovely to see.
Yeah, definitely go and do it because it's a very funny show. I've seen it and I'm going to go and watch it again in Brighton. So if you're in Brighton, come and say hello to us.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
I'll be looming and lurking in the audience.
We'll do a little blank meetup.
Heckling.
I'm probably heckling. Yeah. Just put very nice heckles. Your hair looks good.
Yeah.
The stage is well lit.
Oh, just, your shoelace is untied. Your shirt's untied. That's not what I meant. You got them the wrong way around. Anyway, I've got some exciting news.
Yep.
Our podcast has been shortlisted in the Podcast for Business Awards 2022 as Best Interview Podcast, which is very exciting. People can still vote for us as well in the Listener's Choice Award.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we're kind of up for two awards, possibly. You can go to thepodcastboutique.com/voting and make your vote now. You have to put in the name of the podcast in capital letters. So that's Blank Podcast. And yeah, and we're very excited. It's very nice to be shortlisted for awards. It's always wonderful to get some recognition and validation. That's kind of what we need a lot of the time as creatives. So yeah, it's very nice. And it's very nice to be nominated. We're very excited to be shortlisted. And yeah, please do vote for us in the Listener's Choice Award as well. And today, when you're listening to this podcast, is the last day of voting. So get your votes in now.
Which is 1st of Feb, Tuesday, 1st of Feb, last day to vote. So please do. It's a very nice confidence booster to be nominated. So we appreciate that. Mm. And yeah, if you enjoy the pod and you want to nominate us as an enlist listener's choice, I assume it takes a couple of seconds. So
oh,
you
know, super, please, super
please,
quick.
Please do. And we'd really appreciate it. Giles, what's the link again for people to
It's
to
the podcastboutique.com/voting.
So please do that. And again, that ends today, 1st of Feb. So if you're listening to this after 1st of Feb, unfortunately, you've missed the deadline. But maybe just send us positive thoughts, positive vibes or something, and we'll accept those as well. But if you're listening on 1st of Feb, go to that URL and please give us a vote.
Thank you. Before we introduce our brilliant guest this week, Jim, I've got a couple of lovely messages here from the Castbox app. We've got here one from Miss Buff 5. She says, top podcast, great hosts and great guest. Love these. And then I've also got another one here from Michael Lee, who says, such a good podcast, excellent and open and frank conversation. So thank you very much to those listeners for dropping us some comments on Castbox. You can obviously download the podcast at various outlets. Castbox is a very nice one, though.
Absolutely, yeah. And thank you for those comments. That's really nice that people feel the time to leave those comments. It's nice to read them, and obviously it means people are hopefully enjoying the episode as well. So thank you very much. Please do leave us comments wherever you listen, or rate us. Give us a 5-star review. Chuck us a 5-star review.
Subscribe.
And subscribe as well. It all helps. It does. I know it's a bit of a sort of cliche when people say rate and subscribe and stuff, but it does genuinely help get the pod out to more people, as does leaving comments and that kind of engagement. So please do. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much. Those lovely people.
Yeah, it helps us climb the charts and then more people can discover the podcast.
Exactly. It all helped. I think at one point we were number one in Colombia or something, weren't we?
And Cuba. Cuba, yeah.
Cuba, sorry, Cuba. Yeah, yeah, number one in Cuba. So obviously Big following in Cuba.
Yeah. We're going to do some live shows out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for our world tour, for our 3-date world tour, we'll go to Cuba. Shall we introduce this week's guest? I think this is one of the most prolific actors on TV. And also, it turns out, Charles, an incredibly nice guy.
Oh, lovely guy. It's Tim Downey, who I've been a massive fan of for ages. Like I said to him right at the end of the podcast, one of his favourite characters that I've seen him play is Greg, who runs British London Publishing. And it's just a one-off episode in one of the episodes of Peep Show. And he's just such a brilliant character actor. He sort of pops up in all sorts of things. I mean, a lot of people will know him from Toast of London because he sits there in the sound engineering booth telling Matt Berry's character Toast what to do when he's reading out things, recording audio books and whatever. And people will know, of course, his sidekick, Clem Fandango. But he pops up in all sorts of things. He's been in some really big movies as well. And he talks about a brilliant little anecdote about working with Brad Pitt and getting to meet Brad Pitt and then improvising with Brad Pitt, which is incredible. He's in all sorts of movies, been in Paddington. And I don't want to list them all because he's been in loads of stuff. And of course, The Bill.
And indeed. Yeah. I mean, just an absolute factory of actors, The Bill. Anyone who's decent has been through The Bill at one point. Tim's just the loveliest guy. For our patrons, of course, you can sign up at patreon.com/blankpodcast. We talked to Tim about the theme of like movies and books, and that comes up a lot on the episode, so we asked him for his recommendations, and he spent a decent chunk of time talking about some books and films that he's very passionate about. So if you want to hear that and there's some fantastic recommendations, do sign up at patreon.com/blankpodcast, where we have extra content from all our guests each week for our patrons. So if you want to hear that, do sign up there.
Yeah, it's lovely. We talked about that kind of early on in the pod. He talked about a friend who gave him some recommendations, lent him some VHSs with some films that really opened his eyes to that world. And I love sharing, like I think I said on the podcast, I love sharing playlists and recommending films. And actually down at Backers, the coffee shop that I always mention on each pod, that's the first corner of Blank Bingo there. The mayor, the owner, and I are always sort of sharing movies that we've just watched, and you know, I'm always pinging him links to things that I recommend, and that's nice. It's like always really nice when you know about something and you want other people to learn about it and hear about it. So yeah, it's great to talk to Tim about that stuff, because that's it's really exciting.
Absolutely. So I think we should just get into the episode. That's enough teasing and enough housekeeping for one podcast. So this is the fantastic Tim Downey on the Blank Podcast. A real pet peeve for Giles there, early doors. That was a rant. Oh, that was a mini rant. Can I offer you what I do? I'm completely the same. I find losing headphones very annoying, and the tangly wires very annoying. So I've gone for wireless headphones, and they come with a very annoying little pouch, but actually very useful. And then I have running headphones, sort of like you've got, Tim, sort of like AirPods, but they're different. And they come with this little box that...
Oh, my God.
I was on my keys. So as long as I know where my keys are, and I never lose my keys.
What if that opens though? Do they?
Yeah,
fly
I was going to say
out?
That moment where you pull it out like you're near a pond, and you pull them out, and you go, "Oh no, this is."
I am often near ponds actually, so I probably need to maybe rethink sort of what I do with my. Yeah.
Well, this is it. Disposing of body parts. Exactly. Like
very useful.
The AirPods.
Well, you want to be listening to a podcast.
It's important to be listening to a true crime podcast.
You've got to enjoy it.
Exactly.
You've got to enjoy it.
Serial actually gives a lot of tips on that kind of thing, actually. So, quite useful.
Well, I'm going to hit record on this. We don't do any intros or anything, Tim, so we'll just... we'll amble into it if that's all right with you.
Fine.
It's lovely to see you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks. Thanks for asking.
I was going to ask you to start with, actually. We do minimal research on this podcast, but I did look up some of your past efforts and life travails, and I saw that you were born in Hitchin. Is that
that's right?
Is that that is yeah. correct? Because my in-laws live in Hitchin, and it's a place I've frequented quite a lot. I don't travel around that much in the UK, but Hitchin I've been to quite a lot, and it's a nice little market town.
It is nice. It's certainly changed over the years. Like I was I just happened across an old photo the other day where it was used to be covered in wimpies. Oh. I remember going to many a wimpy around Hitchin. That is one of my sort of prevailing memories of sort of childhood, is you go into Hitchin, because actually I grew up in a village very close to Hitchin, so we always had to travel in. You'd always go into Hitchin, have a wander around Smith's, and then end up in a wimpy. You know, that's an 80s childhood.
Well, right. Massively.
Now, so we used to go to Wimpy and we would deliberately order the Big Bender because it had the comedy connotations of that were
comedy
endless.
Aspect. Oh, absolutely endless. And also, you know, depending on who was on, you know, the ovens that day, the grill.
Yeah.
could sometimes curl it into like a little turd.
Yes.
As well. So you get the comedy of the name and then comedy again in the fact that it looked like a coiled turd in a bun.
Yeah. Comedy has just come so far, hasn't it? Comedy has just progressed.
It's
so much.
Honestly, you could do that today. Funny.
I'd still find
that. You didn't have the wonders of Instagram back then. Otherwise, that would have been trending.
Is Wimpy's still around, though? Because there was one near us in Peacehaven, which is just on the coast. But I don't know if it's still there.
They are still around. There are one or two still around. I actually drove past one the other day, which was in West London. And I was like, I literally had that entire dialogue that happens in a millisecond of, oh, look, there's a Wimpy. God, I didn't realise they were still around. Do you remember those Wimpy that were hit? Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. All within the space of,
I saw a tweet going around, one of those like meme tweets that was like, quote tweet this with something that kids wouldn't understand these days. And you could literally just quote tweet it with Wimpy's, Woolworths, Smiths, three words that I think kids now wouldn't understand. But children of the 80s, it would take you back there in a second.
Oh, without it, the pick and mixes in the Woolworths. Oh,
just one of the best things ever. I really miss, there's not a day goes by I don't think about Woolworths.
I mean, the cornucopia that was on offer though in that time was just, you miss it. Now you look back and go, God, we had it so good.
Yeah. I mean, I bought my first DVD in Woolworths. I mean, I bought my first single in Woolworths. There's so many like historical purchases.
First kiss. A lot of
I wouldn't go that far. But
is a pick and mix as a concept over? Because I feel like it now is sort of exclusively in cinemas. But was it just Woolworths and cinemas before, or was it more widespread? And now is it just cinemas? Or are they even there anymore? I haven't been to cinema for a long time.
Do you know? I don't know. I haven't seen outside of cinemas. That's it. That's all I've seen. I think it may have gone sort of like, is this sanitary?
You know, well, yeah.
A lot of thing is getting involved here. Like you see those photographs of like East End newsagents that would sell sandwiches, and they're just literally kind of like just piled up on a wooden shelf.
Yeah.
With a wire thing saying fourpence or something like that. And you go in and get your, you know, that kind of, I mean, it's gone. It's madness.
COVID. Yeah. I think COVID
gone
has
mad.
COVID has like ended. That. Yeah. COVID has ended. I think pick and mix as a concept, actually, now I think about it, which is a shame. You know, absolutely. COVID has obviously done a lot of bad things in the last 2 years.
Well, I worry for,
me,
for these penny
ending
sweet,
pick and mix.
These penny sweet worse. Companies. I just worry for their livelihoods, because I just think, you know, if the pick and mix is not there, what are they going to do? These people that make snakes,
flying saucers,
jelly snakes, and flying saucers, and those milk mice. I mean,
wonderful little cola bottles.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, cola cubes, cola and pineapple cubes. They were my go-to.
Oh. Good times. Good times.
What a time.
We'll never see their like again.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy.
We talk about BetterHelp a lot on this show, and this month we're discussing some of the stigmas around mental health.
For example, some people think you should wait until things are unbearable to go to therapy. But that isn't true. Therapy is a tool to utilise before things get worse, and it can help you avoid those lows.
And we've been taught that mental health shouldn't be a part of normal life. But that's wrong too. We take care of our bodies with the gym, the doctor, and nutrition. We should be focusing on our minds just as much. And Giles, I can say, and we've said before on the podcast, talked about therapy and counselling. It comes up quite a lot. I found counselling incredibly helpful for sort of different stages of my life, different periods. Sometimes when things are getting a bit on top of me, I book in to see my counsellor. I might see her for a couple of weeks, a couple of months or longer. And then I find a bit of equilibrium. And then when things are tough again, I sort of go back to it. So it's something that you can utilise as and when you need it. But crucially, it's as early as possible, I guess.
I remember many years ago, I did an anxiety counselling course and it was really, really helpful. But it's not always easy to get appointments from doctors. We live in a very fast-paced world and, you know, therapy is sometimes hard to get to. So I think with BetterHelp, you've got a perfect solution to that and something you can dive into very, very quickly.
Absolutely. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to.
It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours.
Give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy.
Blank Pod listeners can now get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/blank.
That's BetterHelp.com/blank.
So you grew up in Hitchin. What were you like at school? Was school a fun place for you? Did you get into drama when you were at school? Or did that come a lot later?
I hated school. I didn't enjoy it anyway at all. I just didn't fit in. I still am dyslexic. And so to be a dyslexic kid in sort of your early schooling, which is sort of like the late 80s, when you're kind of getting into it, was, would you like some extra time rather than anything else? You were given like 10 minutes extra time at the end of an exam, and obviously, which is useless because you're looking at it going, well, it looks right. It looked right an hour ago. It still looks right now. So you were labelled with being lazy or stupid or, you know, you didn't want to get involved. And so therefore that kind of creates, you become very insular and become very sort of, you know, alone, I guess, because you're alone in your own head. Coupled with that, I was bullied. I was an overweight kid as well. My likes were sort of were left of field. So therefore that didn't kind of warm you to, you know, your school friends and stuff like that. That's not to say, you know, I was on my own all the time. No, I wasn't. I had like a little group of friends and that was great. But on the whole, it wasn't exactly the funnest experience that I've ever had. I think what came first was that classic thing that people say is, you know, you try and make your bullies laugh. That's your defense mechanism. You don't have the kind of physical prowess in order to do anything. But what you do have is a sort of quickness. And if you're funny, then you can kind of use that as a defense to either ridicule or just do something or mitigate it in some way. That was my kind of growing up. And I think, you know, that was my route into performing was being bullied, I think, is that defense mechanism of that. And then realizing that you could stand up on a stage and kind of do that, and then it be accepted for what you are presenting, was something quite different. I think, you know, that was quite young, and so it wasn't the greatest of experiences, but you know, it makes you who you know you are today, I guess.
Yeah, it's a story we've heard a few times on the podcast, actually, and I think it's probably a similar story for a lot of sort of creative people and definitely sort of funny people. It's sad, isn't it, that a lot of people's ability with comedy and being funny does seem to stem from an unhappy period or a bullying period or something like that. It's sort of, I don't know, it just makes me sad listening to that, because I think it's the same story for a lot of people, and it's sort of, it is a sort of coping mechanism and almost a sort of a fight against it. But it'd be nice if we could all just be funny without having to go through the difficulty that leads to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it becomes, you know, a retreat as well. It becomes a sort of place that this is the place you find joy by sitting down and watching comedy or reading something funny and something like that. You know, that brings that for me anyway. It brought in the joy of kind of like, oh yeah, this is funny, and it was the release of so many other things by laughter, of sadness and all kinds of other things that you could then have and kind of channel it through that medium. So yeah, it's, you know, it's always been very good to me. Even at times when I've ignored it, it's always kind of, you know, been there, as it were.
Yeah, it's interesting. My son's got very severe dyslexia, and it's you know, it's one of those things that's really challenging for him going through school. And he's lucky is the school, you know, they put a lot of, you know, support in place for him. But I do keep thinking, though, he's kind of lucky that he lives in a time where there is that support network for him. And, you know, we can apply for EHCPs and things. Whereas it wasn't, you know, and thinking back to, like, you know, there obviously was countless people with dyslexia and autism and all sorts of different special needs when we were, you know, we're probably a similar age to him. And there wasn't the support and encouragement for children. That you were just kind of seen as being stupid or, you know, you couldn't do those things. And yet, you know, like we said before, like a lot of creative people, if you'd been given the chance to do more creative things, perhaps, you know, you would have had an outlet, and you wouldn't have had to, you know, be so, feel so kind of lost, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were some the kind of wonderful things that came out of that. I remember there was a kid who was, about 2 years above me, at school, and he was into music, and he was quite, you know, quite eccentric as well. But we just kind of had a connection through art, but mainly through film. As I said, oh, I'm really interested in film. I really love film. And he said, yeah, what films have you seen? And I think at that point, you know, you'd seen, like, I've seen some Carry-Ons, and, you know, some Mel Brooks maybe, yeah, and you know, a couple of other bits and pieces. And he said, well, if you're really interested in film, I'll lend you like 2 VHSs a week, and just watch them. Just, you might not like some of them, but this is more filmmaking. So he would lend me sort of early Scorsese films and Cronenberg and loads of kind of really kind of off the wall Errol Morris, like The Thin Blue Line.
Oh wow!
Loads of really palace pictures and things like that. And I was just like, wow, this is absolutely extraordinary. And again, it opens up that whole thing of going, you're not on your own. There are other avenues. Your avenue is tiny. It's this little kind of village to a village school, and that's it. But actually, the world is far greater and far richer than you could possibly imagine. And I think that, again, stokes that fire of kind of going, well, I want to go over there. Mm. I know this isn't everything now, and I want to go over there. Mm. And I think that is what then kind of goes on to promote those desires and dreams of, gotta get out, gotta get over there and get to, you know, a promised land or something.
Yeah. Do you think, just like going back a bit, do you think on in general that, because I think that being quote unquote different in the 80s was clearly seen as a bad thing. Like if you're different, you're sort of outside. You think now we've got to a culture where we sort of celebrate differences, because really, basically, we are all different in some way anyway. And actually, yeah, that's the beauty of being alive. I mean, a human is that we are all different. Do you think we're in a sort of more of a celebratory culture now of differences?
It's so difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm a white middle-aged man. So from my standpoint, looking at it, I would say, yes, there is a lot more of acceptance for people being different. But if I was probably 10 in a school, I could very easily say, absolutely not. That's still there.
Yeah.
I think as you get older, the cult, it certainly seems a lot more accepting of those differences. But I don't know if it is or not when you're kind of in that, you're right at the at the tip of it. At that age, because it also comes in with so many other points of just trying to work out who you are,
yeah,
and what you like and what you don't like, and experimenting and navigating these kind of incredibly sort of treacherous waters, in knowing who you are and what you would potentially like to do, or what your voice is, and all these kind of other things. So it comes with so many different throngs that come into it. But yeah, that's a tricky one. Certainly from this point, almost looking back, I would say yes.
Yeah.
As in younger people now, but I don't know if it's the other way around. I would like to hope it is, but you know, we shall see. So many more pitfalls as well. There's so many different pitfalls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm looking at it from someone who grew up in the late 80s, early 90s. And that's a hugely different set of pitfalls as to what it is now.
Yeah.
There was no internet or mobiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you didn't, that's one huge thing. You know, you just didn't do that. You made your mistakes in private.
Yeah.
It might be like a Polaroid one that might float around. That's it. You know, there was nothing else. Just kind of a story that someone might tell and get bored and then it would just disappear. You know, it's very different now, you know. And I think that's incredibly bad because part of the human sort of way of being is to forget. That's part of the thing. You grow and you develop. And I'm not the same person I was in 1982 as I am in 2022. And part of the human thing is being able to forget and move on and change and evolve. And culture now is nobody forgets.
Yeah.
Nothing is forgotten. I will bring something up that you did when you were 15 and hold you accountable to it now. And I think that is very, very damaging.
Yeah.
Incredibly damaging. You can't do that. Surely the whole very nature of things is evolution. You evolve, you make your mistakes, you recognize your mistakes, and you hopefully grow and move on, not be constantly reminded of, you know, the tiny little things or whatever. But, you know, that's the very nature of society, is that hopefully there is rehabilitation and you move on.
Absolutely. Firstly, just going back, I am acutely aware of me, a middle-class white guy, asking two other middle-class white guys about differences. So I am actually aware of that. But you're absolutely right about, yes, the culture of not forgetting. It's so true. And I think in a way it almost makes people, creative people, young people, I don't know if it's for you guys, but it makes you be hesitant about doing or saying anything that could be documented, be that online, recorded, or anything. I think it makes people more cautious, which is a shame, because actually the sort of beauty of growing up and creativity and discovery is making mistakes, being silly, being loud, being colorful, whatever. And actually you're absolutely right, this idea that we can't, nothing is forgotten, everything is recorded, I think almost sort of stems that exploration, that creativity, and that a journey.
Yeah, and it filters through with everything. Whereas if you have that, almost like that sword of Damocles hanging over you, and you know, then it does. It represses experimentation, especially within the arts or something like that, or just sort of trying something. Oh, okay, I'll just try this. Okay, that didn't work. Okay, well then we'll try this. You know, you've almost got to be kind of fully formed these days, and your first work has got to be seminal in some. In some respect, and rather than just sort of being, well, that was terrible. What a, the amount of, you know, extraordinary, amazing authors and filmmakers and things like that, they just make absolute dross. But you need to make that. You need that.
We've talked about this a lot. Like, failure is vital. You know, failing at something, because you can't, obviously, you can't learn to progress if you haven't failed at some point. Mm. Jim does a lot of stand-up, I'm sure. He's had many moments of failing, and I know probably there's been moments on sets where you've been like, you know, where there's been a moment of failure. And in projects that we do, you know, there's always going to be projects that aren't quite right. But that is a great moment of growth, isn't it, when you have failure?
Totally. You learn far more from that than you do sort of any great success. You know, all you know is from success, you go, well, that worked, but then where's the that thing to bounce up against? Where's that thing to sort of say, this didn't work, but let's try this or try that movement? Like, you know, the greatest art comes through when you have limitations. There's that wonderful thing in, you know, the Graham Greene's Third Man, where they say, you know, that great line that Orson Welles says, you know, Switzerland has had 500 years of peace, and what is it given to Bart the cuckoo clock? And you go, you know, that's you know, that's true. Some of the greatest art has come through limitations and troubles and things like that, you know.
I watched that movie at university, The Third Man, because I went through a stage where I was, it's a great movie, but I think I thought I was more cultured with movies at the time than I did. But it was, I need to go back and watch it actually. Actually, do you know what? There's a lot of movies I need to watch. I have a, I don't know about you guys, I have an extensive list of famous movies I've never watched, which is some, I mean, Charles teases me quite a lot about this. Some of the names on there are quite embarrassing. So
I find, I'm a bit of a movie, I wouldn't say a movie buff because that sounds like I know loads of stuff about the intricacies of cinematography and stuff, but it's just not the case. But I have watched a lot of films and I have a lot of films at home. It's the one thing, you know, like men generally collect something, and it's films on my shelves, which my wife is constantly trying to hone down the size of this collection of stuff.
Yeah. Exactly the same. You can tell where, you know, there's quite a lot of it's just one room, you know. It then seeps out into so many other things. But yeah, no, I'm the same. I have a, you know, a huge sort of film library of just the weird, the wonderful experimentations and all sorts, just because I just find it fascinating.
Okay, later on, actually, for our patron, we will do an extra section for our patrons as well at the end of each episode. Patreon.com/blankpodcast.
Oh, seamless. Jim, plug. That is so
uncouth. I'm going to ask you then, Tim, later on for your recommendation of like one film everyone needs to watch. Ideally, more a random-y thing or something like that. But we'll ask you in the patron section and that can be your recommendation. So before we do that, can I ask you about the skull on your... And yeah. I get it. This is a visual question. Does not work for podcasts.
Not a real skull.
Yeah, is it a loved one that
hasn't been down near ponds, any ponds recently?
Yes, this is me earlier by the pond. I just thought I'd bring back a trophy.
Yeah, why not? I just wanted to ask about it. Yeah.
A lot of work. It's a Mexican Day of the Dead.
Yes. It's got the artwork on it, has it got this sort of,
so it's got all kind of swirls and pans and things like that on it, which I got it in Mexico. I got it in, it sounds dreadful, I got it in where was I, near a place called Chichen Itza, which is the kind of temple of the sun that you probably see in a lot of pictures and things like that. And we're going back in September. September's a good time to go and a bad time to go because it's monsoon season, but if you do go in September, the shadow of the steps creates the scales of the serpent, Kulkulkan, that is said to have come down because of the rains at that particular time. It looks like the snake is coming down to earth and fertilizing the earth. And there's lots of wells around that area as well, which I can't remember what they're called, but sacred Mexican wells where they used to throw sacrifices and things like that. So it's a very sort of fertile land, but that is where I got that.
Amazing.
Got that skull.
So weirdly, Tim, I also have a Chichen Itza story. How odd is that? It's literally never come
this
up on the
podcast. This could not be more middle class.
I'm very left out.
So middle class. I went there with my family. I was quite young. I was 12 or 13 or 14. We went on a family holiday to Mexico. And it's not as cool as your story because I remember going up the steps, but I don't remember the serpent thing. That's very interesting. I don't remember that. I don't remember the wells, but I do remember being very ill on the coach there and throwing up excessively on the coach to Chichen Itza, which obviously the other people on the coach were not fans about. So my memory of crawling up the steps to try and get to the top, despite being half a person because I've just thrown up a lot of my insides. So that's my memory of Chichen Itza. So I didn't bring back anything, although apart from
some bag of sick,
some sort of virus or bag of sick. I remember the bus driver being very kind to me actually, and stopping and letting me get off the bus, and everyone was he was, some of the other,
and then driving off.
That's not kindness. That's necessity. you have to get off.
Yeah,
this is awful.
Yeah, I remember a bit of pushback. You're ruining it for everybody else.
I remember my mum being very, very embarrassed, but I think she was constantly embarrassed about me from the ages of about 10 to 15, anyway. But I didn't get any, you know, cool memorabilia
merch
from the merch stand. No.
Interestingly, as well, is that now you can't go up those steps. Because of the wear of constant tourism. So if you have been up those steps, and I went up those steps, you now cannot do it.
Oh,
wow.
So you've had a rare feat that you've...
A rare feat. Well, you look out all across, there's a ballpark and there's the temple of like 1,000 soldiers or something like that that's there as well, which all these pillars, all these carved pillars of Aztec warriors. So you kind of get a view over the whole area. But now you can't go.
And they had sort of ancient basketball sort of courty things where they played a really court, ancient... Yeah. Is that what it was? The ancient version of basketball or something?
That's right. Yeah, you used to do it with your feet. Huge long court and do it with your feet. And it was something very Aztec, is if you lose, you got your head cut off. You know, what is very, very...
Is that... Oh,
that's a bit on the nose, don't you think? But,
literally. That's... Yeah, that's... wow, that's great. That's grim. There you go.
Yeah.
Good memories. Great memories.
Great memories of the heads decapitated.
Wait, so did those heads go down the wells?
Yeah, I think they were called cenoches, and they were used for sacrifice. So apparently, the one you can go and swim in them, and they're fresh water, and they're incredibly deep, sort of natural forming wells. But what they would do is throw sacrifice. So you would then dress up a child or something in gold and silver and all of that, and push it into the well in order to then be an appeasement to the gods and things like that. And apparently when they were discovering Chichen Itza, it was by a Chicago businessman or something, and he'd heard tell that these sacrifices went on. So he took a digger down to the bottom of these wells and just dredged up skeletons, but covered in jewels.
Ah, oh, of course.
The bottom of all the wells. Yeah, so he made sort of like a fortune by dredging these wells. And they're all kind of dotted around that particular area, which is why the city's there, because you've got ready fresh water.
I was thinking it was more like at the end of the game of basketball, it's like a three-point throw that then the head gets cut off. And then if you can get that in the well, it's an extra 3 points. But the reality is actually a lot more grim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So far less playful.
Yeah, shame. Shame. I would not have survived. I would not have survived those ages at all. I think I would have been one of the first to be covered in jewels and chucked down the well, unfortunately. So thank God I was born in 1984.
So Tim, you had this friend that gave you these VHSs, which is lovely that you have, you know, when you find people that are like-minded, it's always a kind of a beautiful thing, I think. You know, you find people that you're, you know, it's something that's said a lot these days, but finding your tribe. And so what can you remember what those actual films were, and what was that kind of, did that open you up to sort of being ravenous about film? And then obviously I know the acting came later, but was that definitely the catalyst for you wanting to sort of start getting into performance and drama and stuff?
Most definitely. And also wanting to kind of get into filmmaking as well. Just the craft of it, I just thought was absolutely fascinating, and what you can do and how you tell stories and how you don't have to be linear with your storytelling. You can be as kind of wild and crazy as you like. You don't need necessarily a lot of dialogue. You don't necessarily just need to see the person who's talking. You can kind of show other aspects. And it was, you know, they introduced me to things like Bergman as well, who I still is, you know, my kind of go-to when it comes to filmmaking and storytelling and what you can do. And you know, to tell an adult story, difficult themes, well and entertainingly, and not to kind of be the story, not to be so unbelievably heavy that you'll just sort of ostracize people from it, but being able to kind of touch upon these great topics and difficult things well. And I've always thought that's the kind of mark of great art, is being able to just talk about really difficult things and do it delicately, and do it with a sense of respect, and do it with intrigue, and just kind of almost planting seeds of things in your head, in the audience's head. I've just found wonderful. Like Tarkovsky as well is another great sort of director that I've always adored. And he would do, you know, incredibly long, huge long takes of things, and just kind of you would just be watching, and you'd be praying for that thing to kind of just cut to end, just to kind of give yourself a little millisecond break. But he wouldn't. It would just remain and remain and remain. And I always found that just, you know, the confidence in filmmaking of that, of just being, okay, we're just going to put the camera there. It's just going to play out. Or we're just going to have a shot of a door whilst there's an argument going on, but you won't hear, like, all those kind of things I found just absolutely fascinating. So it was all that kind of opened everything up through seeing all these different things, you know, from Hal Ashby and things like that, from Harold and Maude and The Last Detail and all those kind of just slightly left field films.
Being There is one of my favourite movies.
That's great.
Such a brilliant film. Peter Sellers is incredible in that movie. And it's, and that, some of those are sort of untouched gems a little bit that people haven't really kind of become aware of. And I always think it's quite nice when you know about something that's great and other people haven't kind of heard of it and you can kind of, you know, you kind of allow them in and say, oh, look, have you seen this? And it's quite, I was thinking with your friend sort of giving you some VHSs. I like that. I like introducing people to new things that they might not have heard of or seen, or like music, right? Doing a playlist of songs that they might not have heard before. I like that, you know, drawing people into your world and things that you like and sort of hopefully inspiring them, not always maybe, but that's always been really exciting to me. Do you like doing that as well with other people?
Love it. Although, you know, there are moments where you kind of go, well, that's just a bit too. Here is some sort of very strange film made in Papua New Guinea in 1974. maybe that's not the one to start with.
Yeah.
I absolutely, I just get such joy of the joy of discovery, like old bookshops or even, you know, sort of old video shops or something, you know, they just that sense of you have found something amongst the dust and something that someone may have forgotten and you have unearthed this extraordinary gem that will just give you so much joy and so much sort of intellectual thrill. It's just great. And we've lost a little bit of that with the advent of, you know, Google and, you know, e-books and all these kind of things, which are fantastic because you can literally find anything anywhere.
Yeah.
But there is something so wonderfully magical about putting yourself in that sort of situation. Old bookshop shopping, which I still, you know, which I love and adore. And if I can find an old bookshop, I will go there. It's as simple as that. I will just, that is where you will find me. Covered in dust, rummaging through something on the floor,
picking up the great works of Chichen Itza.
Oh, this is it. Trying to find out who was the architect of this. Interesting. Exactly. But yeah, no, I love being able to kind of share that. Or if someone says, "Oh, I really like this," you go, "Oh, well, in that case,
you're going to love this.
That stems from this and this and this and this." And if you go to here and you look at this and that, and if you like that aesthetic, then try this.
Yeah.
You know, and all those kind of things. These ideas sort of started here. Or if you want to watch that, look at these kind of Swedish or Balkan films and things like that, because then that will feed into something else. And yeah, I love it.
It's great.
Sorry, Charles. Sort of speaking of sort of great works of art and, you know, that delve into sort of real subtleties and strong sort of Bergman influences, you got your big break on The Bill.
Yes, I did.
Nice segue.
That's exactly.
Hidden gems here. Yeah, real sort of
gem. that's a hidden gem. I was a young thug. Who I think I had to attack my mother with a chair, and then the police burst in because I'd blame my dad on beating my mother up, and actually it was me. So then obviously I was arrested, obviously, and then, you know, interviewed by Tosh Lines, which was a thrill.
Nice. One of the big guns.
He is the Bill. He was the Bill.
He was the Bill.
Simple as that. You know, he just was. That was extraordinary. I even remember the casting of that very vividly because I had to go all the way down from Hitchin, all the way down to South Wimbledon, you know, Merton.
Yeah.
That's where the studio is. That's where Sun Hill was. So you had to go all the way there. And then audition and learn your lines and all those kind of things, and then come all the way back. You know? But it was great. It was so exciting to do something like that. People wanting you to do it. People going, okay, show me what you've got. So yeah, that was great fun. Yeah.
So what had your journey been to then? Had it been a sort of drama school or anything like that? And what I'm guessing at the time you're probably sort of doing a lot of auditions and stuff, but that must have been quite exciting to land that job.
Yeah, I was quite young, not that young, but quite young. There was a few auditions, and I was just at sort of the local college, Hitchin College, at the time. So there's just a lot of castings and just finding yourself. Do I want to do this? Do I not want to do this? And all those kind of things. And I think that was quite a catalyst in the sense of going, well, maybe I maybe I could do this, because you don't really think of it as a job. You kind of think of it as, this is fun to do, but surely something that's this fun isn't a job. Like, that's just like a hobby. Surely that's all that is. And you'll have to go and, you know, be an accountant or something. And so knowing you could do it and it's fun and you might get paid for it was like, oh, okay, well, maybe this could work. And my mother was very good for that. My mother was very much sort of like, well, just if it, you know, there are so many things in this life that are not nice. At least try and do a job that you enjoy, because that's what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life. So try it. Just try it. Just do it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But give it a go. Because if you don't, you'll regret it. And there will always be that little part of you that kind of thinks, ah, if I'd have just given it, I didn't try hard enough. And there's nothing worse, I think, than that kind of battle with yourself. There are so many things that are extraneous that are hard and difficult to deal with. But when it's a battle with yourself and that sense of regret, that's the worst, I think, because there is only you. That was a choice you made, and maybe you shouldn't have made it, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, she was incredibly good at saying, no, do it. Yes, it's difficult. Yes, it's hard. But you know what in life isn't that's worth doing? Just try it, do it, go do it. So you know, at least that kind of fills you with, yeah, all right, I'll try it and just see what happens.
Yeah, and that goes back to what you were saying, Giles, earlier about failure being part of that. It's like if you tried something, as Tim says, you tried it, maybe you shouldn't have tried it or whatever, but at least you did. And if it fails, it fails. And then it might take you back to point one and you look at your options again, or it might take you to a second place where you think, okay, that didn't work, but I really enjoyed that aspect of it. But actually, this is interesting. And then it takes you to somewhere, really. So I think it's... but it can feel hard, Tim, can't it? Like if things aren't working out, or...
Of course it can. But I think it's all about
anxieties and stuff.
One of the main things that I've kind of necessarily learned, but kind of noticed over my many years, is that the thing you think you're going to get from something isn't necessarily the thing that you'll get from it, if that makes sense. So for instance, if you think, oh, I'm going to do this job and therefore I'll do a job, and then that job will then begat another, and that's the kind of route that it will go. And usually it doesn't work like that. Usually you assume that the thing that you assume will happen after doing it, but it's not. It's the fact that you met a certain person. I met this person, and you might at the time kind of think, oh, that's just nice, I've met someone. But actually that was the reason you did the job. That was the reason. So there's always it's never obvious what the path is, but it's always worth being open enough to kind of think, well, let's just see what this is going to give me. You know, I've met some of my best friends on jobs that continue to be, you know, incredibly close after like 15, 20 years. But that was never kind of the intention. I didn't go into the intention kind of, oh, I'm going to make a new best friend. You kind of assume it's something else, but it's just being open. I think that's the main sort of lesson, is just sort of be open to things. And it's not just, you know, what you think it is. It will change, it will shift, and that's kind of very exciting. Can wrong foot you, but it's very exciting at the same time.
Yeah,
I thought it's really nice what you're saying about your mum being encouraging, because I think as parents, and you know, we talked to a lot of people about their parents maybe not being discouraging, but obviously worrying about how you want your child to have stability and want to be, you know, make sure they're like sort of financially okay and that. And sometimes I've been in situations with I lost my parents at a young age, but I've lived with families where the couple have been quite encouraging but not wanting me to sort of take a step into something that's risky, I guess. But actually thinking about what's more important was not having that regret is worse than the kind of financial risk or the instability that you'll be going into a life in the creative arts. Actually, the idea of having those regrets is far worse than any of those things. That's really lovely that you had that parent who was willing to, you know, give you that encouragement and support.
Very much, very much. And I think from her point of view, it was probably because her parents were incredibly strict and very sort of like, you will be doing this and you will be doing that, and that's just the way you will do it. And I think that, you know, it either takes you one or two ways. It either makes you the same or it makes you go the complete opposite. And thankfully, my mum was, and still is, the complete opposite, as in, you know, there's so much time to regret.
Yeah.
There's so much, there's acres and acres of time that you can regret. But if you can just make those little moments of joy, little victories, as we used to say, you know, take those little victories, take that moment just to realize where you are and who you're with. And this is fun, you know, and it's allowing yourself to just sort of say, do you know what? This is fun. This is so good. I could be doing anything, but I'm doing the thing that I wanted to do. I'm doing the thing that I wanted to do since I was seven. Just those kind of, and that is such a joy and a rarity that you should cherish it. And you should kind of take those moments and not squander them by going, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? You know, sit there and just kind of take it in, just even if it's just for a few minutes of just taking that moment. And that enriches the entire thing so much. So I've you know, been very, very lucky on that. But also just those little lessons of, you know, just take a moment, just look around. Okay. Because that's hard.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you're good at doing that. Are you good at kind of, because I think as, yeah, because I think, you know, well, I can't speak for Jim, but I know, you know, you're kind of constantly, as a freelance creative, you're sort of, you're trying very hard to enjoy the journey of whatever you're doing at that particular moment. But then you're obviously wondering what's next and, oh, you know, what am I going to be working in 2 months' time or whatever? Are you good at being in the present moment and enjoying that process when you're there?
I have to very, very consciously do it. It's not a natural thing. I will have to kind of consciously think, right, no, just take a moment and look around and just soak it in for just what it is, rather than kind of be worrying about, okay, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And when I get, you know, all moments seem to be either past or present. It's very past or future rather than just being in the moment and in the present. So I will have to consciously do it. I'm better at it now. I think having kids helps with that because they are so much in the present. And just to kind of enjoy those little moments with them, those moments where you kind of recognize, oh, you've learned something, or oh god, you've remembered this, you're gonna remember. It's gonna be the thing that I'm gonna be told about in 20 years time. Did you remember you did this? That's right. But that has certainly kind of shaken up, you know, a lot of other things. It's just seeing yourself through their eyes and seeing the world the way they see it, so new. Because you remember as a kid, you know, a half hour lesson was literally all day. This is taking all day to get to this point, whereas now you'll literally sit down, have a coffee, make a note and go, how come it's 4:30? I don't understand. So that has been a real eye-opener of trying to just enjoy that moment, because it won't come again. It may come again in a different form, but that moment won't come again. That you will just have that. And I think it's finding that little joy, finding that little moments of hope and all those things. I think that's just, it's not spoken about enough. It's just taking those little moments that are joyful and allowing yourself to feel joyful in it, I think is, you know, a wonderful, wonderful thing. Can find it, and it's difficult, which is a shame. Finding joy is difficult, but it is.
It's the allowing yourself as well, because I think a lot of like feelings of guilt come along with that. Like, because I, as you're talking, I'm trying to think like what moments have I had recently that, and I had one last weekend because I did the musical comedy awards. I did the heats third year I've done them, and I got through for the first time through to the quarterfinals, and I felt really guilty. When they read my name out, one I was surprised to because the quality was very high. I thought I did it. I had a good set, but I was surprised to go through. But it was nice surprise. But in that, I couldn't even really celebrate because I felt guilty for like the other acts that were all amazing and really nice people. Like the sort of camaraderie backstage was really, really great, which doesn't always happen at comedy. I felt guilty for them. I felt a bit embarrassed. I didn't know what to do. So I just sort of sat there clapping. I didn't know really what to do, or
clapping
people
yourself.
Like congratulate. Well, like they read the names out and you just it's just awkward. Yes, kind of clapping myself. Yes. But rather than was I supposed to do like a little fist pump, or what was I supposed to do? I just sort of sat there, didn't change my facial expression, just sort of, you know, oh, okay, cool. And people are like, congratulations. And you don't know what to say. Oh, thank you very much. But it's all a bit weird. And actually looking back then on the train home, I bought myself a milkshake to celebrate. So that was my little moment. Oreo milkshake from Five Guys. Yeah, my little victory. And on the train home, I was like, oh, actually, yeah, that was, I've done well there. Cause it's a good high profile competition and like did okay. But it's still hard to like, because then my next thoughts were, right, quarterfinals. Right, I need to get people to come down and support me in quarterfinals. It's going to be difficult. What am I going to do on my set, et cetera, et cetera. So like even that little moment was so fleeting. It was hard to sort of, it's like accepting it and like without the, trying to feel guilty or embarrassed or anything like that and just enjoy it. But I think, I just think it's hard. As you say, it's really difficult.
It's incredibly hard. And that's only to yourself. That's only to you. That's only to allow you to do it. That's only to allow that little moment. Because if you go out the next round, you're just going, oh God, I've just spent my entire time being stressed about this. I haven't even enjoyed the fact that I'm actually getting through to this next bit. You know, I haven't, and so therefore, when you kind of then retroactively look back on it, you're going, oh, I can't even enjoy it now because I'm out.
It's painful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get moments when you're on set sometimes and you can look around and say, oh, wow, like, you know, I'm standing next to that person and I'm working with that director, whatever it might be, you know. Do you ever get those moments?
Oh, absolutely. Walking onto set for the first time, you always think, oh, this is really exciting. And it's just such a sort of special thing of going, oh, this is really exciting. And you might be working with someone you enormously respect and kind of think, well, that's really exciting as well. And we're on a level now because we're going to have to make this scene work. Like I'm as much of a part of this scene now as you are, because without me in it, it doesn't work. Without you in it, it doesn't work. And so suddenly you're on a level. I remember doing a scene in a film called War Machine with Brad Pitt. And there was a lot of build up to it. As in, have you met Brad? Have you met Brad? I was like, no, I haven't met Brad. So you kind of build up. The head of going, well, this is going to be Brad Pitt. It's Brad Pitt, as well as people going, have you met Brad? Oh God, this is so nerve-wracking. And then when you arrive on set and Brad's not there, Brad's, you know, sort of in his trailer waiting, and we were doing this scene in this Afghan poppy field, so you would kind of be taken through and kind of go, okay, well then the scene's going to be here and you're going to be there, and then Brad will be there, and then Brad arrives, and you know, looking at a face you've seen is kind of like looking at Big Ben. Like you've seen it all the time, you know it, and suddenly that is in front of you, less than sort of like half a foot away, and it's one of the most bizarre moments. And so therefore it's a little kind of discombobulating to start with, and then you kind of think, oh no, hang on, we have to do this scene. We're both actors now and we have to make this scene work. And then to really heighten that as well, the director said, okay, so we're gonna just go do some impro. And you go, I'm sorry, what? a little bit of you know, impro. We'll do a little bit of comedy, and we'll just kind of, you know, we'll just see how that goes. You go, I'm doing impro comedy with Brad Pitt in an Afghan poppy. It's moments like that you try.
You've really got to stretch your imagination in those moments.
Yeah, it's just the oddest thing, and then you find yourself going, actually, Brad, you know what? You know when you said that, that's very funny. If you say that, then I'll try and do this, and you'll go, okay, yeah, let's do that. That sounds quite funny. And then you go, yes, we're just, you know, kids playing.
Yeah.
Just trying to make the best what the scene is. That's all it is at the end of the day. It helps. He was lovely and was very receptive.
But I guess he wants it to go well as well, doesn't he? He wants it to go. He doesn't want it to be a chore. He wants it to be fun and enjoyable. So I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It is, like you say, it's a level playing field at that stage because you're both working on this moment.
Totally. And remembering those moments, you're going to go, that's a nice moment to just remember. That's a nice thing, rather than kind of get so flustered that, oh God, you know, get through it, just get to the end. You know, that's kind of a shame.
Yeah.
But you know, it happens. You know, I say this, but you know, we've all done it. I will continue to do it, I'm sure. But
well, I was about to ask you, I can see you're a very respectable chap and I'm sure you wouldn't dish the dirt on anyone or name names, but I'm about to ask you sort of any moments where it hasn't gone well on set and maybe you work with someone and that connection hasn't been there. But before I do it, I just want to say, I love the idea of people going, have you met Brad Pitt? Have you met Brad Pitt? Because that builds up. I might start at gigs, have a little entourage with me.
Have you met
Jim? And people going, have you met Jim Daly? Have you met Jim yet? Have you met Jim Daly? And that will really build up, I think, my profile.
Quarterfinals of the Comedy Music Awards.
Exactly, yeah. Wait, Jim's going to come along in a minute. So just, you know, if If you met, be ready to meet Jim.
It's the Gatsby effect. It's where you just talk about him and talk about him and talk about him. And go, well, when is he going to arrive? When is he going to arrive? And then suddenly, there's Jim. Yeah. Resplendent in sequins, ready for the quarterfinals.
With his banjo. I don't know if you've got a banjo.
I don't, but now I'm thinking of adding one to my aura. I think that would work well. Okay, so to the question then. Have you had any moments where it hasn't gone well on set? I don't know, energies haven't worked on set. How do you sort of get through those moments? Because you still have to do the job.
Yeah, there have been. Wonderfully, very, very few, which I know is incredibly lucky. I've heard some real horror stories from people, and I seem to be incredibly blessed that hasn't happened as a general thing, or even so enormously, going, oh, God, where to start? Yeah. I mean, less than a handful of times. And I think then you've just got to, well, I do anyway, you just kind of get into a state of zen-like, okay, this is where we are. Don't rise to it, or don't get flustered by it. Otherwise, it's going to knock you out, and then all you're going to have then is going to like, fuck. Because at the end of the day, nobody sees all that. They're only going to see what they film.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're kind of like, oh, about that moment is then going to be recorded for forever. So over the years, just kind of think, no, just try and, you know, observe it, don't absorb it. Just take it. That's what it is. That's where they are. That's their thing. Fine. I'll just focus on my thing and we'll just calmly try and get through it. You know, that's the best. There are obviously other moments where you're sitting down going, this is fucking outrageous. And there are obviously those moments that again, will, you know, those kind of thing. I'll have a coffee, please, Lynn. Thank you. Oh, two sugars. Did you see that? Yeah, good. And there will definitely be those moments. But I try not to rise to them on the rare occasion. But yeah, no, thankfully there's been, you know, very few. So that's been very lucky.
Do you think there are a few of those moments because you are clearly a nice guy and respectable and you're clearly level-headed. And I think if you bring that kind of energy to set, then it almost influences. Whereas if you're a sort of, I'm sure, again, no names, I'm sure there are sort of some performers who are more diva-y or more ego about them. And then if you bring that to set, then maybe it influences how other people act. Oh,
I'm sure, you know, I've always been sort of told, which I think was probably a very good lesson early on, is that, you know, everybody's there to do a job. Everybody's there to do a job and everybody wants the same thing. They want to go to work, do their job, do it well, enjoy it, hopefully, and then go home. And that makes the day just go quicker. Just having a nice time makes the day go quicker. It makes it easier. If you have problems, hopefully as a team, then you will work together rather than you being the problem or it being insurmountable, or you just kind of getting so flustered and kind of, oh, and then kind of upsetting everything else. You know, there's a lot of time constraints with filming, and there's a lot to get through sometimes, and there's a lot of other kind of stressful bits that kind of come into it. So, you know, just try and have a nice day, like, you know, like the Gus Van Sant, you know, whatever it takes to have a nice day. And I think that's an, you know, an important thing of just, no, this is, you know, it goes back to that thing of going, this is a fun job, even if you're doing something really depressing. It's still a fun job and you're still kind of tapping into what it means to be human. And there are some interesting people around and people want you to do as good as you can. You know, no one's trying to undermine it because then it fucks everything else up. Mm. So, you know, those little moments, especially on filming, you know, everybody wants it to come together because that means everybody else can kind of do their job and everything comes together. And that's great. I try to be as sort of positive as possible. I just enjoy it. It's not even being positive. It's just go and enjoy it and say good morning to everyone and be nice to people who are being nice to you. And why not? It's easier to do that. It's easier to be pleasant and be nice and be gracious and all those things than just kind of be, Margaret, can I get No, no, no. I only want blue Smarties. You know, it's much easier rather than, I said blue Smarties, Margaret.
There's an orange one in here.
You know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't care. You know, well, we're in Lapland. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I'd just be exhausted. Yeah, I have very little energy anyway. So just all of that, take would just floor me.
Yeah.
But, you know, people do it. And, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to get dragged into that. So I'll just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, quite a lot of actors we've had on have said, like, you know, learn your lines, turn up on time, be nice.
Yeah.
And it's a pleasant experience.
Absolutely. And I think that's the secret to a long career is just get there on time, be nice, don't be, you know, hang your clothes up at the end of the day. Don't throw them on the floor. You know, all these little bits and pieces, things like that, you know, don't be rude, be nice to everyone. And yeah, that's fine because I'm sure there's a lot that goes into it where, you know, in the casting, if you kind of think, God, I've got to spend 3 months with this guy.
Yeah.
Maybe go, oh God, unless you know you're the money spinner or something like that, just by having your name in it. Other than that, you gotta think, oh my God, you know, I can't spend 3 months with this. Yeah. Can't deal with that. It's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, we'll end up killing each other. You want to have a nice time.
But it is more tiring being angry, I think, isn't it? Or being, I don't know, just a lot, I guess. We are tired individuals. Especially if you're a parent, which I'm a newish parent, it is tiring. So I think anything that minimizes the tiredness is good. I just think on days where I'm flustered or angry or whatever, I definitely feel more tired at the end of the day than on days where I've just tried to keep ticking along and be nice and make everything happen. It's just, there's only so much energy in the day that you can use.
Absolutely. And if you're going to expel all that energy on, you know, these are not the right shoes, or, you know, the light in here is just a bit too bright, it's too dim, you know, all these kind of things. You think, God, is that what I'm going to remember this day about? God, there was this bulb that kept on, you know, those kind of things. You think, okay, just, there are bigger things. Just let it go. Yeah. Open the door, see the morning, you know, the mornings, especially when you get there on set, everyone will moan about, oh, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, God. And yeah, if you take a moment just to kind of look at the dawn, you kind of go, God, that's great. Look how nice that is. Look how nice. That's beautiful. And we're here to witness that morning, you know, because I love mornings. I'm quite a morning person. So to see sunrises just fills me with wherever I am, no matter how bleak it is or whatever. But that, those dawns, you kind of, oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Just to witness, you know, the coming of the day. I really enjoy that.
That's lovely. Tim, you're really prolific. I mean, you've been in loads of stuff, loads of amazing stuff as well. What's your, and it seems like you're working all the time. What's your kind of process when you're going from kind of one project to another? And do ever, are you ever working on things that are kind of overlapping at all?
Yeah, to a certain extent. And again, I think it's learning to decompartmentalize. It depends what the thing is. Like at the moment, I'm working on Good Omens at the moment. So there's a lot of travel with that because that's in Scotland. Obviously, I'm living down in London, but it's utilizing that time. I'm a big reader, as you know. I'm a very, very big reader, and so I use that as a sort of pressure valve of just kind of escaping into something else, which means kind of, you know, releasing whatever that is, and using that as a kind of middle ground to then start something else. I'll soon have to start learning scripts for my next project, which I like doing. I just like taking my time over something. So I'll just dip into this and gently kind of wander my way through those and gather it all together and gather my thoughts and things like that. And I use reading and as a nice kind of gateway. I know other people use music and all sort of things like that, but for me, it's just kind of exploring, escape into another world and into another, just another realm. And I find that a very sort of cleansing kind of, like, okay, we're moving from one to another rather than kind of having to kind of shove my head full of so many words and different things. Does that go with that? Or is that, and the sort of the meshing of characters. But that's usually my method.
Cause it's finding that time. Cause I think it's hard when you're busy and you probably think, oh, I haven't got time to do that. I would love to read more. And I often tell myself I haven't got time to do it. I probably do, but it's about sort of almost changing my mindset to recognize when that time crops up, when I can do it. Probably means less time on Twitter or TikTok, which I'm shamefully have started being on, and actually using that time better, or thinking, oh, you just spent 15 minutes on Twitter. That could have been a couple of pages of a book or something like that. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like reframing kind of your thought process to actually use it properly.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, just taking those moments, like, for, like, you know, just the great time for me for reading is traveling, like be on the tube or the train or a plane or something like that. That's the time I will just read. Like, you know, if I have any downtime at home, I won't watch TV. I'll probably read.
Yeah.
That's the choice I sort of make of going, oh, I could watch this or this, which means, you know, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I will read, you know, a book a week. If I had time, I could easily get through a book a week of just putting in the hours and just going, no, I'm just going to, you know, really get into it. But that's my release. That's my sort of time out of time, is to then go, oh, right. And if you get a good one, oh, you get a really good book. Oh, that's glorious. You know, you will find the time then, you know, sitting on this. A number of times, you know, I've been with my kids or used, you know, well, the only place I can sit in this entire house is literally on the stairs, like a 17-year-old on the telephone. So I'll sit and I'll, you know, quietly read, or you're in between things. You'll be cooking and, oh, I'll just finish off this chapter, or so I'll just quickly finish that. But yeah, it's an obsession, basically, is what I'm saying.
It's a good one. I'm as a writer, as my main day job, I'm a terrible reader. I have terrible reader's block. And it takes me ages to get into new things. And I keep trying. There must be about 10 books that I've started and not been able to fully commit to. And I find it really upsetting, because I do love reading when I get into a book. But I think maybe it is there's too many other distractions, and I need to.
Well, this is it. It's like they say about painters and decorators. You know, if you go around, you know, a painter in a decorator's house is not going to be painted and decorated, because you go, well, I've done it all day.
Yeah,
I've literally been painting and decorating people's houses all day. Why would I want to do that at home? And I think it's very similar. Like, I will watch less television, even though people assume, oh, you must watch tons of television.
Yeah.
That's what you do. And no, that's what I, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's actually quite nice to go and do something else. You know, that's why, I don't know, footballers don't play football whilst not playing football. They'll go and play golf. They're not going to keep playing football, because that's what they do.
Well, that's very reassuring. Thank you.
A lot of them do play FIFA, which is a kind of football, but it's not the physical.
That's true.
Element of it.
Just that.
Yeah. Just ruining your thumbs.
Exactly. It's the wrists of an 80-year-old.
Exactly, but the legs of a 22-year-old. What a combo.
Tim, it's been an absolute joy to talk to you. It really has. Huge fan of your work.
Thank you.
I have to say, my all-time favorite character of yours is Greg from Peep Show, the publishing guru of British London. Having met lots of publishing people over the years, it's a real treat that that character is just brilliant. And big fan of your work, and I love that episode. Thank is one you. Of my favorites of Peep Show. I have to say, it's a brilliant episode. Well, yeah. I've got one last question, Tim, if you don't mind. I know we've taken a lot of your time already. Do you have ambition to, you know, we've talked about filmmaking and I know you've written for stage, but would you like to make your own films at some point?
Yeah, I would love to. And I've always really enjoyed just the short format.
Mm.
I love that. I love being able to tell a story as succinctly as I can. I'm actually going to be making some shorts later this week, actually.
Oh, which amazing.
Was a decision. I'm going, let's. So it's just, you know, me and a mate, we're going to get together. And so I've taught myself, you know, sort of just rudimentary editing and things like that. Just go, no, we'll just get some stuff together and we'll put it on YouTube and just get that going again after, you know, COVID and everything.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love a good, you know, I love a good story. It's why I wanted to do this job in the first place. You know, let me tell you a story is one of the most exciting things you can hear in any room. Oh my God, let me tell you this.
Yeah.
And you're like, go on then, tell me. Yeah. And if it's told well, and if it's told with excitement and it's a practitioner that can do it, there is nothing finer than being told a good story, ghost stories or funny stories, anything. But if they're told well and it's bewitching in some way, then, oh, it's glorious. It's the thing I always seek to do, is just tell a good story, tell it well. And you know, that's really exciting.
Can I pitch you a short film about a boy who goes to Chichen Itza on a coach and throws up? That's where we start. And then when we go it. After that, who knows? Yeah.
We start with you, quarterfinals. That's how it is. When we just intercut that. We go, how are these things?
Well, the finals are taking place in Chichen Itza, maybe.
The Mexican Musical Comedy Awards.
Yeah. It's going a bit in between us, I think. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tim. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. Good luck to you as well. Yeah. And thank you. I've really, really enjoyed it.
There you go. Tim Downey on The Blank Podcast. What a lovely guy. Prolific actor. Some great stories. Some great advice about creativity and sort of keeping going and perspective. And also some fantastic historical information about Chichen Itza. I mean, I don't know what more you want in a podcast.
No, it's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, he's clearly, you can tell he's really well read because he's just very wonderful and erudite and talking about all the different things he's into. It's just really lovely. And I loved the story near the beginning of the pod where he was sort of saying about the encouragement his mum gave him. And I really, really liked that. And it really, touched me a little bit. I was thinking about that fact that, you know, it's not just what it's something I always kind of say to people. I get a lot of people sort of messaging me about like they want to do something, but they're not sure whether to do it. They're umming. But I always, I'm a bit of a go with your heart kind of person and your gut as well. But I always think if you've got something that you're passionate about and you want to do it, don't have that regret of not doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if that particular like arm of it doesn't work out, you might end up doing something. You might have really wanted to be an actor and then doesn't work out, but you realize that you love directing, or you realize that you love editing, or that you actually really liked being the crew side of it, or something like that. Like, these things can lead to other, you know, absolutely, potentials, but you won't know until you do it. So I think absolutely, you know, gold advice, especially from someone as prolific and successful as he is as well. I think that's definitely worth taking on board. So yeah, really refreshing and just lovely chat with a great guy.
And what listeners rather, can't see this because obviously we don't film our podcast, but Tim is one of the best moustache wearing people around. I mean, there's quite a few of his characters have moustaches, but yeah, he had the full rack there this morning.
I think you can't say full rack, I don't think, on a podcast. I'm joking. Well, we have taken a promo photo, as we do for everyone. Mm. So that is on our Twitter now. So the moustache is on full display there. I think there are some people can pull off a moustache and some can't. And, you know, you see a lot of people trying. It doesn't. I don't think I could.
No, I don't think I could either.
Tim 100% pulls it off. I mean, it is a superb moustache. And I think, I think it's one of the best I've ever seen, actually.
Yeah, it was good. It's got girth as well, which is important, I think.
It's got depth, you know, if you can believe that. It's got it's like a weighty, there's no patchiness to it. It's got complete depth to it. The sort of width is right. Yes, it's got the girth of sort of from the nose to the lip.
But it looks well kempt.
But it's well kept. It suits him as well, because this is the other thing. Like, a lot of people wouldn't. Yes. I don't think you and I would suit moustaches.
No, I don't think I would suit a moustache.
But it really suits his face.
Suit a beard.
So. Oh, I couldn't imagine you without one. I think I've known you so long.
Wow, that's it. You see, with one now, used to it. But yeah, but definitely not a moustache. I don't think Michelle would like my. And probably the same with Miranda. There's still a bit of a thing about moustaches, isn't there? So I think a lot of ladies don't like them.
There's a taboo, I think, around moustaches. Mm. And I think we need people like Tim, proudly wearing his moustache, a superb moustache. Yeah. I think to really sort of dispel that taboo a little bit.
Yeah.
And it helps that he's on TV so much that we're seeing it. It's getting into the sort of public conscience. And that's what we need, I think, to progress the...
Yeah, it's something we didn't touch on in the podcast, but maybe that's something we need to talk to him about.
We'll do a part two. We'll do a part two with him and we'll talk about moustaches.
Yeah.
I'm sure we could string that out for an hour easily. But right, anyway, on that note,
amazing guy. I love talking to Tim, and he's just a really nice guy. So it was really lovely to have him on. And thanks, Tim, for being our guest this week.
Absolutely top man. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do get in contact with us on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at the same handle, which is
@blankpod.
Indeed, and we'd love to hear from you. And of course, please do rate us on whatever app you're listening to this podcast on. Give us some 5 stars and leave a comment on there as well, and we'd really appreciate it.
Yes, please. I mean, there's lots of people listening each week. And yes, if you just got like just 30 seconds of your time, just go on wherever you listen to your podcast. Just go on there and hit rate or subscribe. If you're not a subscriber, hit subscribe. Give us a review, because it'd be lovely to get those reviews up.
It absolutely would. Absolutely. So that's it. I think we should wrap up here.
We should.
And we'll see to our listeners that we'll see them next week, of course, with another episode of the Blank Podcast. But in the meantime, thank you to them. Thank you to our patrons for their support. We love them, of course. And thank you, Giles, as well.
Thank you, Jim.
Just for being us.
Yeah.
Anyway, have a great week, and we'll see you again soon on the Blank Podcast.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.